This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
What if I told you alien matter has invaded everything, everywhere? That is not science fiction or a conspiracy theory. It's just the awful fact. Matt Simon is a science journalist with Wired magazine. He's published several books, and his latest is A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. From San Jose, California, Matt Simon, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
And thank you for having me.
What drove you to go beyond a Wired article to develop the world of microplastics into a book?
Well, I guess if it was during the pandemic, I thought a great idea would be to make myself feel even worse about the state of the world and dive deeper into microplastic pollution while I had a lot of free time on my hands. As you mentioned, I had been writing about this for Wired for a number of years here and there as these studies were kind of trickling out, but I noticed that nobody had really done a cohesive really treatment of the state of the science of microplastic pollution, which has really just been taking off over the past couple of years. And I really like the way that you put it here as this alien matter. It is this truly bizarre and really daunting kind of pollution that scientists are really just beginning to come to terms with.
So getting back to basics, what is plastic, really?
Plastic is, simply put, really just these long chains of carbon. Carbon tends to form really strong bonds with itself, and what petrochemical companies can do is convert fossil fuels into various kinds of chemicals that are chained together into this kind of plastic. There's lots of different kinds. Just look around you, bottles and bags. Your clothing is now made largely of plastic like polyester or nylon. The issue becomes that, plastic is this very strong material, but it does break down over time. And when you see a bag or a bottle floating around in the environment, that's really just pre-microplastic. That is going to break down eventually into these tiny, tiny bits. Scientists define them as particles smaller than 5 millimeters, which is about the width of a pencil eraser. Those tiny particles then get into absolutely every corner of the environment and into essentially every living thing on this planet.
And it gets even smaller and never really goes away. What is a nanoplastic?
Yeah, if it wasn't scary enough, a nanoplastic, as scientists define it, is something smaller than a millionth of a meter. This is small enough to get into individual cells. So the thinking now in the scientific community is, all right, well, these things keep fragmenting over time into smaller and smaller bits. When do they stop, right? So do they eventually break down into their component chemicals? And I think the predominant thinking right now is that they actually reach a kind of sweet spot on this nanoscale where they get so small that they are not subjected to the forces of abrasion anymore, and they kind of float around perpetually as these teeny tiny little specks that again can get into individual cells. And there's just astronomical amounts of these particles, these nanoparticles, much more so than microplastic particles, which are a little bit bigger, in the environment, especially in the atmosphere, where they're just really swirling around in huge quantities above our heads.
Just as a frame of reference, Matt, is it likely both you and I have plastic in our brains as we speak?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's actually the one bit of science that we're missing on human health. So scientists have found microplastics in all kinds of human organs. So in the placenta, in gut tissue, in lungs, in our blood. And it's an almost certainty that it is in our brain. Scientists have not yet done a study to find it in human brains. It's very difficult to separate these particles from human tissues, but I can almost guarantee you that they're in our brains, and these nanoparticles are small enough to pass the blood-brain barrier, which is kind of this force field that protects our brains from intruders. They're so small that they're getting into individual cells and very likely deep into our brain, and scientists have essentially no idea what that could mean for brain health.
Wait a minute. We've been making plastics for over 100 years, and we still don't really know how it affects human health?
This is the scary thing about plastics. plastics is that we began producing them in tremendous quantities starting in the 1940s, kind of after World War II, the production really ramped up, and it has been increasing since then exponentially. And scientists can go around in the environment and look into, like, ocean sediments and things like that, where they can look back in time over the decades in the layers and show that as the production of plastic increases exponentially, so does the pollution of microplastic in the environment. It's out of control at this point, and we have been exposed to plastics in really this much more intimate way than I think the plastics industry wanted us to believe. So, you know, we're surrounding ourselves with carpet that's made out of plastic and sheets and things like that. Really, scientists didn't have as great an idea of the extent of microplastic pollution until recently, and only in the past couple of years have we gotten really good studies on indoor air in particular is absolutely tainted with microplastics. One calculation says that we are perhaps inhaling around 7,000 particles a day, and we don't know what that means for human health, other than we know that particles of any kind in the lungs are terrible. We know that the component chemicals of plastics are extremely toxic, even in really low doses. These are known as endocrine disrupting chemicals, or EDCs, and the particular problem might be for children whose bodies are developing, yet they're crawling around on the floor of our homes where a lot of these microplastic particles are accumulating. So that is the huge concern here, is that some of these chemicals are extraordinarily toxic to human health, but we just don't have good studies yet on how much microplastic is too much plastic to have in the body.
You know, it's interesting that some countries seem to be more aware of this than others. Germany, I think it was in the late 1990s, began to ban PVC flooring because they knew it was breaking up into toxic particles and they just didn't want people walking around on that stuff. But it seems like North America, we're just oblivious to it.
That is in large part because of the interest of the fossil fuel industry, which has captured our politicians and infiltrated universities as well. You actually get much more funding for microplastics research in Europe, where this isn't as much of an issue. It's, of course, an issue, but not nearly as much as in the United States in particular. In North America, we're way behind on this research, which is an extremely urgent thing to pump as much money into as we can, because if microplastics and nanoplastics are having these big impacts on human health, which I'm pretty sure that we're going to find at some point, but that might be 5-10 years down the road, we need to start putting interventions in place. I mean, I would argue that we should be doing that immediately in the absence of these kinds of good studies that are finally tying microplastics and nanoplastics to various human health concerns. There's things that we can do in the human home, like vacuuming and that sort of thing, but at the end of the day, it is going to require a fundamental renegotiation of our relationship with plastic. It is not this benign material that the industry has always sold us on. It is toxic in any number of ways, both to human health and thinking about every other organism in the environment that is exposed to this stuff constantly.
So I'm going to presume that there are not crowds of people holding picnics with disposable cutlery on the glaciers of Greenland and Antarctica. So how do particles of plastic get to the ends of the Earth even?
That, to me, is the truly scary thing about microplastics, is just how easily they move through various compartments in the environment. So plastics, by their nature, are quite light. That's one of their charms of the material. So when they break into microplastics, they very easily take to the air. And there has been a lot of good modeling in recent years by scientists who are showing that just like particles of dust, these things take to the atmosphere and travel thousands upon thousands of miles. And Arctic scientists were a bit shocked when they were sifting through snow samples and were finding tire particles, of all things, which is strange because they're on Arctic sea ice, there are no vehicles driving around. What they modeled was that this is, in fact, coming from Europe. So microplastics are, in large part, coming from synthetic rubber, from our tires that break off and flush out to sea in wastewater, and then eventually take the air and blow into the Arctic. And essentially, every other place in the environment. Scientists are finding them absolutely everywhere, in rainforests that are supposed to be pristine, in Antarctica, which is supposed to be pristine. The air is this big transport pathway for microplastics and nanoplastics. You can stand on the top of a remote mountain in the Alps, and microplastics will be raining on your head in significant quantities. Scientists will tell you, who are working on microplastics, that no place on Earth is untouched. And that's horrifying and, quite frankly, embarrassing. And I think our descendants will look back on this time in human history with utter disgust and just horror. Like, what have we done with this material that is now pollution that is so out of control? There's no taking back what's in the environment, but luckily there are things that we can do as far as mitigation is concerned to at least turn down the tap of these particles flowing into the environment.
Well, yes, you have a whole chapter about microplastics in the ocean, and it's a frightening story, and it's a scale too big to imagine, really. Could you give us a couple of examples from the science of plastics at sea?
I think the primary concern here is, in fact, a global one. So in the oceans, we have this carbon process where the sea absorbs carbon dioxide, and these little plants called phytoplankton absorb carbon dioxide and spit out oxygen. Those are eaten by zooplankton, which are these little tiny animals. When they poop, that poop falls to the seafloor, and sequestered in that is the carbon from the atmosphere. That is actually a huge sink of carbon, and it's actually been saving humanity from itself to a large degree when it comes to climate change. We don't want to mess with that process, yet microplastics are infiltrating that. So these zooplankton, when they're eating this phytoplankton, are also eating microplastics. And scientists have shown that actually changes the density of their fecal pellets and slows them down as they are descending to the seafloor. That then allows other creatures in that water column to consume those fecal pellets, which keeps the carbon from walking away down into depth. That, I think, is the primary concern among microplastic scientists, that we are messing with these fundamental carbon and climate processes when we're pumping all these microplastics into the ocean. And that is to say nothing of all the creatures that are directly consuming microplastics and suffering. So there have been a lot of studies showing that even in concentrations of microplastics that we currently have in the environment, they're extremely toxic to a certain organism. The big concern is that when they're eating these microplastics, they're actually filling up their stomachs with not food, and that it's decreasing their appetite for actual food, and that could be changing the way that they're growing and just weakening them in general. That then has ripple effects up the food chain. So the larger organisms that are feeding on those organisms aren't getting as good of a meal because of the microplastics injecting themselves into the food chain. And there are any number of other processes that scientists are investigating, and it's just not looking particularly good because the oceans have become absolutely saturated with microplastics, and that is continuing unabated as microplastics are just flowing in exponential forms out into the natural world.
Science finds life in the gut can influence brain activity and probably emotions. We think our consciousness controls the stomach and the digestive system, but it's partly the other way around. So now enter plastic, lots of it. Some estimates are we may eat a credit card weight of plastic every week. What happens in our gut?
There's another frontier in the science here, and scientists have been finding tremendous quantities of microplastics in human feces. We know that we are ingesting it in any number of forms, so obviously stuff that is packaged in plastic is highly contaminated with microplastics. We're drinking it in our drinking water, both that's coming from the tap, and that's certainly in plastic bottles is highly contaminated with microplastics. What are those particles doing in our guts? It's a big question. So I think the issue here is that, I call microplastics a poison like no other because it is really this physical form of pollution. So like mercury is an element out in the environment as a pollutant, but a microplastic is a physical piece of pollutants. So when it's moving through our gut, it gets trapped in, you know, the walls of our intestines and could be causing problems there. But as these particles are moving through the environment, they're actually accumulating a microbiome of their own. It's called the plastosphere. And that could actually be transporting some of these strange microbes that don't belong in our guts into our guts. And that could be changing the way that our microbiomes are shifting in our guts as we get older, that sort of thing. We just have very little idea because microplastic science is so new and because there just hasn't been a tremendous amount of funding into the human health aspects. But yeah, then once our gut microbiome has changed, how does that interface with our brains and any number of other processes in our bodies? Scientists just don't know, other than to say that they can test for feces having a lot of microplastics coming out the other end of us, which is obvious because we're ingesting so many of them. But the particles are also crossing through the gut barrier, most likely. Studies on rodents have shown this happening in real time, and because we're mammals as well, it's likely happening to us. And we just don't understand the implication, which is the urgency for pumping tremendous amounts of funding into this kind of research.
Are plants incorporating microplastics? What about the food we eat? Is that plasticized now?
That's actually a surprisingly tricky avenue of research. So in the lab, you can grow plants in microplastic-tainted soils, and so some studies show that, yeah, you do see some uptake of those particles into the roots and perhaps into the tissues of the plants. That's quite a tricky avenue of research just because there are many different ways to grow crops. You can do it hydroponically or in proper soils. There are, of course, many different kinds of crops that we eat. We do know, however, that the soils that we're growing our crops in are absolutely packed with microplastics. That is in large part because when we do laundry of our polyester clothes, those fibers wash to a wastewater treatment facility, and around 10% of the fibers are just flushed out to sea in the treated wastewater. But the remaining 90% is actually sequestered in this material called sludge, which is human waste that's then spread on fields as fertilizer. So we are spreading concentrated microplastics on our crops, which is, of course, not only a concern for those plants, but also when those fields dry out, the winds come by and scour the dirt and pick up all those microplastics into the atmosphere. This is actually a large input of microplastics into the sky is just from the fields where we're growing our crops. And we have been getting studies showing that certain crops grown in highly contaminated soils of microplastics do suffer. I think the bigger concern here is actually all the organisms and microbes in the soil itself. So there have been other studies that have looked at the impacts on earthworms that suffer greatly when ingesting microplastics. Microbial communities change in soils contaminated with microplastics, and also the structure of the dirt changes. As you add more plastic, it doesn't absorb water as well. That could be a huge concern going forward, especially during droughts. If a lot of that water is just evaporating away, that could have its own impacts on our crops as well.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. You're listening to science journalist Matt Simon. His new book is A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. Matt, how long will the plastic that humans release stay in the environment?
It's a tricky question. So you'll hear a lot of times that plastics will last 100 years or 1,000 years in the environment, and it's hard to say for sure. So first of all, we have lots of different kinds of plastics. So PVC is a particularly tough one that might take longer to break down than, say, like a wisp of single-use plastic for packaging that might break apart quicker. So the other thing is that we're talking about all kinds of different conditions in the environment. So if you are a plastic bag 2,000 feet deep in the sea, you are subjected to fundamentally different forces than a plastic bag floating around the surface. So one of the big things that breaks down plastic is UV bombardment. That's what breaks apart the bonds. and releases a bunch of chemicals in the plastic into the sea, which doses any number of organisms in the vicinity. But that UV actually helps break down that plastic into microplastics much quicker. So it's hard to say, okay, for sure plastic lasts 100 years in the environment. Well, that's not necessarily true, because any different kind of plastic has any different kind of period of breakdown. That's the tricky part here, is that we don't really know the extent of the toxicity of the plastics that we've already put out. A group of scientists are calling this the plastic toxicity debt. So we've pumped all this plastic out there. We haven't actually seen the full toxicological effects, because the stuff is all still breaking down into these smaller particles. And that's given that we suddenly stopped emitting this stuff into the environment. We're emitting more and more and more year after year. So we're building up this debt, like a credit card debt, but it's toxicity of these particles going forward. And we are just trying to catch up, as far as the science is concerned, as to what that means ecologically. But the early studies are showing very, very terrible effects on ecosystems.
Matt, you mentioned the additives that come with plastic. I mean, plastic is not just plastic, the raw material that the oil companies produce. It's a lot of other things. Could you talk to us about one or two? What's in there?
The issue here is that we don't really know, right? So plastics companies don't have an ingredient list on their plastics. They're not required to. And what scientists and chemists have to do then is actually reverse engineer these plastics, which is absurd. The burden is on us as a scientific community and as consumers to know what's in our plastic, when really the industry should be telling us. So, you know, the thinking is at least 10,000 different chemicals are used in plastics, a good chunk of which are known to be toxic. And when we're thinking about, okay, what are the effects on human health? Those EDCs that I mentioned are a big one. BPA, you've probably heard of, obviously, is one of those that has been phased out, but often substituted with similar chemicals that are as toxic, if not more toxic, for human health. And then we have to remind ourselves that, my God, every organism on this planet is now exposed to microplastics in some way. So one chemical that might be okay for like a snail to ingest might be entirely toxic for a specific kind of algae. That's what we're up against, is we have to do these toxicological studies for essentially everything, because everything is now exposed to microplastics. And we're doing that not knowing the exact ingredients in these plastics. That comes down to chemists to reverse engineer it. And that should not be the way it needs to happen. But that's where we are, because there are just no rules in place for the plastics industry to actually tell us what's in this stuff.
The tsunami of plastic can even influence climate change. The links are complex. Could you introduce us to some of the plastic-climate relationships that scientists are studying?
So first and foremost, plastics are fossil fuels, right? So it takes a tremendous amount of energy to extract those fossil fuels. It takes more energy to process them into plastics. And one recent calculation suggests that given the just huge increase in the production of plastics in the coming decades, by 2050, the industry will be responsible for the emissions of 600 coal-fired power plants. So while as a society we are decarbonizing, we are moving away from coal plants, we've actually been making great progress in North America decommissioning those coal plants, we have this plastics industry really just emitting more and more and more. And over time, that is going to cut into these gains that we're making on climate change by decarbonizing elsewhere. So that's the first one, is that plastics are just fossil fuels. They come with carbon emissions. The other thing is that once those plastics get out into the environment, because they're carbon, they release that carbon as methane and as carbon dioxide. And there's some early calculations showing that as a particle breaks down in the environment, it releases exponentially more methane, which is an extremely potent greenhouse gas. So I think, okay, well, we have just unfathomable amounts of microplastic floating around in the environment. All of it is off-gassing this carbon. How much of that is actually contributing to climate change? It's not a calculation that's been done yet, but I suspect that it's going to be a significant contributor because these are fossil fuels in a different form. We're not burning them, but we're turning fossil fuels into plastics and using them and expelling them into the environment. So the other, I think, really fascinating, and maybe fascinating is not the right word, a little bit scary idea, is that because so much of it is in the atmosphere, how then is that changing atmospheric dynamics? So for one, these particles of plastic are often darkly colored. That absorbs some of the sun's energy. Does that actually help heat the atmosphere? But also, are these little particles acting as nuclei for clouds? So clouds form as water droplets glom onto dust particles and things like that. Are microplastics doing the same and essentially brightening clouds? That would, of course, help bounce some of the sun's energy back into space, but that could also change weather patterns. And we are just coming to terms with the amount of this stuff that is in the atmosphere. We now have to figure out, well, what are the consequences of that, given that every cubic inch of the atmosphere is now infested with nanoplastics and microplastics? What are the consequences there, not only for planetary health, for all the organisms that breathe that air, but, you know, for the atmospheric health as well?
We separate our waste here for recycling and put the plastics in a separate little container, and they dutifully collect it. And I know darn well that none of it is being recycled. It's just going to the landfill anyway. So what are the wishful thinking solutions that are coming out that actually aren't working?
Yeah, I mean, well, this goes back to the early days of recycling, right, which was the plastics industry saying, okay, we have this solution. It is your fault as consumers that all this plastic is escaping into the environment. You need to recycle more. Just, like, do better as consumers. When all along they knew that was crap. We are recycling vanishingly little plastic. So a recent calculation said that maybe 10% of plastics have ever been recycled. There was a more recent study in the United States that showed that we are recycling maybe 5% of plastics, which is absurd. And that shouldn't be the case. Us as consumers who have been doing great at this, like being dutiful and throwing these things into the recycling bin when we're done with them, so much of it has been going to landfill. Or, even more destructively, developed nations have been shipping the plastic that they can't recycle profitably to developing nations, where the stuff is often burned with tremendous detrimental impacts on human health in the area, but also injecting these clouds of microplastics into the atmosphere. So recycling, I think going forward, we're going to need bigger programs that are funded not by taxpayers but by the plastics industry. We need to charge them huge amounts of money as taxes to fund these programs that actually do recycle as much plastic as we possibly can. The trick is that plastics have just become extremely complicated products. A pouch of baby food is this multi-layered plastic that is extremely difficult to recycle, which is why we've been shipping so much of it to developing nations for them to deal with. So at the end of the day, recycling is not going to be the answer in and of itself. We just need to stop using so much plastic. At the end of the day, that's the only overarching solution to this crisis, is that single-use plastic as a concept is absolutely insane, and we need to stop with it. That is the only big systemic solution here that is really going to turn down the tap of both macroplastics, like bottles and bags, and microplastics flowing into the environment. Just stop it already. And we can't fall back on these other ideas from the plastics industry, like bioplastics, which are plastics made out of carbon from plants. You need a lot of land and water to grow those plants. It's plastic by another name. It's plastic all the same that breaks into microplastics and nanoplastics. So we have to be very careful about the plastics industry bamboozling us again with recycling. The burden should be on them for this catastrophe, not on us as consumers.
Now, we may have to put some sort of cap on plastic production, just how many factories you can have and how much can be made out of it. We need some sort of limits, I guess, to save the world from our plastic.
Yeah, there's a treaty in the works right now for potentially capping plastic production. But just watch for the plastics industry to try to kneecap. this is their revenue going forward. That's the daunting thing, is that as the world shifts away from fossil fuels as fuels, the plastics industry wants us to use fossil fuels as plastic. That's where they see their revenue coming in the future, because they see the writing on the wall with clean technologies. Instead of, course, investing, in those technologies, the fossil fuel industry would rather switch to plastic. That's what we're up against. We're up against these very big, powerful corporations that are trying to break international commitments toward plastics production, because that would cut into their bottom line. But at the end of the day, we as consumers need to elect politicians that take plastic pollution seriously. We need people that understand that climate change and plastic pollution are two sides of the same coin. A lot of the mitigation that we can put in place for either climate change or plastics, it's not just a one-off solution. We have a fundamental problem with fossil fuels. Plastics are just fossil fuels disguised as some other form. We can't let the industry keep bamboozling us. This is an extreme emergency ecologically and for human health. And we just need to, as a people, come together. It's good to have individual action, like recycling more or just like using less plastic as an individual, but we need these huge systemic changes to fight against these vested interests.
Our guest is Wired scientist, writer Matt Simon, and his new book on microplastics is well written, and it's a huge worry. Look for A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. Find links to this interview, the book, and more microplastic science in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Matt, thank you for confronting some of the hard stuff here.
And thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.